Thank you, Shauna. My name's Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is my 8th International AA Convention. I went to my first. I joined AA when I was 21 years old. I'm sober 41 years now. So if you have trouble with the arithmetic, I'm about 50. Okay. So. And the first time I went to an international convention in Denver, I made a sign that said, Denver, easy does it, and hitchhiked. I didn't have to hitchhike to this one, and I'm grateful for that. Okay. At our 25th anniversary International AA Convention in Long Beach, California in 1960, the Grapevine presented a wonderful souvenir book called AA Today. Bill W. contributed an article called AA Tomorrow. Bill described the fellowship's challenges as follows. To maintain what we now have and avoid complacency, deal with problems in communication, open wider the channels by which alcoholics may be reached, recognize that our alcoholism has damaged our spouses and children, encourage the support of Al-Anon, cooperate with governmental, state, and private agencies dealing with the larger problem of alcohol, and forgive these agencies their errors. He gently chided us by suggesting that we may be blocking communication and encouraged us to take a fresh look at this. He also suggested that we all need to increase our own spiritual growth. He concluded by saying, "We are still laying down the foundation on which all coming generations of AA will have to stand, perhaps for centuries." Since Bill's article some 55 years ago, our fellowship has had a profound influence on the way society views and treats alcoholism. And we have traveled far to fulfill the promise our co-founder envisioned in 1960. Today, there are some 61 general service structures around the world. By most counts, there are 196 countries in the world, and there is AA activity in about 175 of them. Our big book has been translated into 68 languages, with 12 to 15 pending at any given time. Other AA literature has been translated into 89 languages. But lest we become too self-congratulatory, we should note that upwards of 6,000 languages are spoken in the world today, and about 2,000 of those languages do not have a written tradition. Furthermore, in 1960, Bill said there were about 25 million alcoholics in the world and about 250,000 AA members, which means that we, at that time, had only reached 0.1% of the alcoholics in the world. A recent estimate was that there are 240 million alcohol abusers in the world today, and our 2 million members still represent less than 0.1% of people with alcohol problems in the world. So we still have a lot of work to do. The great Viennese psychiatrist Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor, said that he was perfectly content with the idea of a Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor as long as it was balanced by a Statue of Responsibility in San Francisco Bay. Since we AA members have hit bottom and have been given back our lives, we are well acquainted with freedom and responsibility as we work the 12 steps, and we can enthusiastically echo Dr. Frankl's sentiments. So let us look at what our responsibilities may include tomorrow. When our anonymity traditions were compiled in the 1940s, they focused on the media then in existence, newspapers, magazines, radio, films, and television. They did not discuss the telegraph, carrier pigeons, smoke signals, drumming, semaphores, or the Pony Express. Of course, they also did not discuss the new media and social media because they weren't invented yet. When the computer and the internet were invented, they were as resounding and profound a revolution as when Gutenberg invented the printing press 500 years ago. The new media and social media, electronic and audio communication, Facebook, Snapshot, Kindles, Instagram, Twitter, Nook, iBooks, Skype, and so on, these are not to be feared by our fellowship. They are to be embraced so we can partner with them in a responsible fashion to reach alcoholics, keeping in mind our anonymity traditions. If it requires some lengthy introductions, as happened today, so be it. Our traditions will continue to be a bulwark against distractions from our primary purpose of helping alcoholics recover. Hence, their observance is a great responsibility and will continue to be a great responsibility in AA tomorrow. Michelangelo was once asked how he could envision and create that beautiful statue of David, and he said, "Well, I just looked at a block of marble and I chiseled away everything that wasn't David." That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous with our inventories. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous with our traditions. We focus on our primary purpose. And consistent with Occam's razor, we focus on the simplest solution for our organizational challenges. And the traditions help us do that. Print media is declining, with newspapers and magazines shrinking or disappearing altogether. A huge percentage of AA World Services and Grapevine income has always derived from the sale of print literature. How will that income be replaced? The shift away from print will also affect the almost 500 intergroups, central offices, and answering services in the U.S. and Canada, let alone the rest of the world, which rely on literature profits to provide basic services. Will we finally and responsibly move toward that elusive, shining goal of being fully supported solely by our group contributions? In addition, how will the shift toward electric and audio media affect the corporate structures of AA World Services and the Grapevine, which were founded as print publication ventures? We need the best minds in our fellowship to figure out how to financially sustain our services, and I'm not one of them. AA in the future might prove that we need more literature, not less, to reach the increasingly diverse, hard-to-reach, difficult-to-serve, and marginalized alcoholics, many of whom have co-occurring psychiatric disorders. Our website could support online video versions of all our recovery pamphlets in numerous languages. For those who speak languages with an oral tradition only, we could record the literature in their native language on MP3 players or similar cheap devices, and if it's fiscally prudent and responsible, we could give them away or sell them cheap. With the advent of a mental health pamphlet in the next few years and the continued drug addiction of many alcoholic newcomers, our patience, tolerance, and the third tradition will continue to be challenged. This brings to mind that individual AA members, groups, and service structures must make whatever adjustments are necessary to extend a welcome hand to those who are interested in our fellowship. In AA, what's different is good. Without diversity, there is no unity. How many groups have purposely sought wheelchair-accessible meeting locations or responsibly provided American Sign Language interpretation for deaf and hard-of-hearing alcoholics in our community? My wife tells me I'm hard of listening, which is a little... Have we confronted the racist, sexist, and homophobic language and attitudes that sometimes pervade our fellowship? Here we might ponder the words of Leo Tolstoy, who said, "Everybody wants to change the world. Nobody wants to change himself." Sometime in AA's future, I'm certain we will see an updated version of the Came to Believe painting, more commonly known as the Man on the Bed, which is available as a special item for the Grapevine. And instead of presenting two white men calling on a third white man in a hospital bed, it might feature an African-American woman and a Latina woman 12-stepping an Asian woman. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Organizations that only look inward eventually collapse upon themselves like a black hole and drift away from their primary purpose. We need to constantly expand our outward focus on reaching alcoholics. Otherwise, we'll fall prey to incessant navel-gazing, an emphasis on rules rather than spirit, dotting I's and crossing T's, worrying about minor missteps, rather than taking an expansive view of what we can do for the alcoholic who's still sick. In other words, we risk becoming the kind of people who would step over a drunk to argue about the traditions. And there's nothing responsible about that. Still, we do need to look inward from time to time. The United States regions of the U.S. and Canada General Service Conference have between 8 and 18 delegate areas in them. They could be rebalanced, and we could even add 2 U.S. regional trustees. In the last 20 years, the conference has allowed 2 new delegate areas, and 5 or 10 more delegate areas wouldn't hurt. What changes are needed in the general service structure in your country? Since 1985, Intergroup Central Office Answering Service and General Service Office staff have met annually in a seminar that allows these special workers to share valuable information and experience. There are about 75 Spanish intergroups and central offices in the U.S. and Canada. Perhaps someday there will be a Spanish-speaking intergroup central office answering service AAWS and Grapevine seminar. We have already hired a number of Spanish-speaking GSO staff, and we could probably use more to deal with this demographic that will eclipse the white majority in the United States in the next 35 years. We already have the technology to hold an online forum and reach 10 times or 100 times or 1,000 times the number of people we currently reach at our regional forums. The responsible use of technology can make those things a reality anytime. We can be boldly responsible without being careless or reckless. For example, a few years ago, India had tremendous success with televised public information work. There's really no reason why the areas, central offices, and general service offices of other countries can't do the same. There are alcoholics within a block of this hotel who have never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, or what's worse, what they have heard makes them not want to join. We still have a lot of work to do. In keeping with the theme of responsibility towards future generations, Bill W. had the foresight to initiate a World Service meeting every 2 years beginning in 1969. It was called a meeting rather than a conference to avoid the suggestion that it was any kind of governing body for AA. There are now other similar service meetings in Central and South America, Europe, Asia, Oceania, the Pacific Rim, Africa, and the Middle East. Such meetings will only increase in the years to come. Will the World Service meeting become a World Service conference? Stay tuned. Still, in large countries where there are more than one general service structure, AAWS will still have to be the careful referee of copyright and print publication problems. Some federal courts have already determined that AA is a religion. We will continue to have to disabuse the public, professionals, and prospective AA members of this notion. In the spirit of responsibility, what can we do to inform people of the difference between AA's non-denominational and generic spirituality and the world's religions? It will become increasingly important that we keep AA safe for all, including women and children. We could have, as a fellowship, a wide-ranging discussion on protecting minors and women from sexual abuse by AA members. Let's not make the same mistake other venerable institutions have made by sweeping this under the rug. In comparison to other fellowships, we are way behind on this. So 60 years ago, in 1955, at our international convention, when Bill W., as a representative of the old-timers, turned our service structure over to the fellowship, he didn't say, "Isn't this a cool thing I'm giving to you people?" He didn't say that. As he turned over his life's work of blood, sweat, and tears to the fellowship, he said, "Alcoholics Anonymous was at last safe, even for me." And I think we need to all ask that question in our AA work. Is the General Service Conference safe, even for me? Is the Area Assembly safe, even for me? Is the district safe, even for me? Is the central office or the intergroup safe, even for me? Is the treatment facilities and corrections and cooperation with the public community, with the professional community and public information committees safe, even for me? Is my home group safe, even for me? Are the people I sponsor safe, even for me? And if the answer is no, we still have some more personal work to do, and fortunately, there is no expiration date on the 12 steps. Some may think these visions of AA future responsibilities are too far-fetched or too radical. And to you, I would say that Ambrose Bierce's definition of radicalism was the conservatism of tomorrow injected into the affairs of today. In AA, the sky is clear and bright and blue, and it invites us all to walk in the sunlight of the Spirit with newcomers the world over. Despite technology and social media and new scientific approaches to the treatment of alcoholism, nothing can replace the one-to-one, face-to-face sharing between newcomer and sponsor, which is the bedrock of our whole fellowship and the spiritual experiences we have been privileged to be a part of. My greatest wish for everybody who goes home from this wonderful, uplifting International AA Convention is the first thing that happens is a drunk pukes on your shoes. The early AA members embraced the biblical sayings of James, "Faith without works is dead." Emma Lazarus wrote a poem called The New Colossus about 150 years ago, and part of it is emblazoned on the base of the Statue of Liberty. And what she said can be a clarion call for Alcoholics Anonymous tomorrow, in the future. She said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send them, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." And now my favorite passage from the big book. "Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed." Thank you for everything you do for Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, Paul. That was really wonderful, and I have a lot to think about as an individual and as a group. Our next speaker is Teresa, and she's from Minneapolis.
Hi, everyone. My name is Teresa, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am delighted to be here. I have the privilege to be a member of Foxhall, Chapter 7 in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. We meet on Thursday nights at 7:30. We're an open speaker meeting. We have one man and one woman shares with a 10-minute break in between to snare new people and show them a friendly face and a warm welcome. And the church we meet at, Wooddale Church, it cracks me up because it looks a lot like the mothership. Especially like in wintertime with this like big lit up spire where I think, you know, maybe tonight's the night we're just going to go woo, 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 woo. And off we all go, right? And only here do we understand that because like my family's like the mothership. What? So I want to thank my friend Carol. I think she's the one that's responsible for getting me onto this panel, and that's why I'm listed as being from Montana. I was from Montana for many, many years. I grew up in AA. I didn't get sober in Montana, but I got sober in Montana. I should say I didn't dry out in Montana, but I got sober in Montana, and I'm very grateful for that. And I recently was taking a new woman through our book, you know, at my dining room table, and we got to that part, the end of Bill's story, when he says, you know, each day, you know, the circle continues as one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, totally paraphrasing and botching it, but you all, I see head nodding, and we get it, right? And it's like, and it just occurred to me that in 2015, you know, it's, nothing's changed, except everything has changed, right? Except you gotta, somehow here, the message is still carried most effectively one-on-one, right? Sitting another alcoholic across my dining room table, looking her in the eye and telling her the truth of my experience with drinking and the truth of my experience with not drinking and refusing to work the steps and getting weirder and weirder one day at a time, right? And the kind people in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that didn't run me off just because I was here and I wasn't interested in working your steps and I wasn't interested in sponsorship or home group or service. I really was interested in picking up your men. And that was like, because really, it's like once I put down the drink, that's really kind of all I had to offer. And I mean, my worldview was so narrow that that's all I could see. And it took me quite a little while, you know, and a couple of geographic moves around the country until I got from Minneapolis, where I grew up, and I went to New York City and lived there for a couple of years and got wacky-pataki there, and then got this idea that if I could get out to the Rocky Mountains, I could probably pair off with a cowboy and be A-okay. And I got to Helena, Montana, and totally, completely, 100% by accident, wandered into a group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The name of the group was It's in the Book. And I mean, there's nothing in my history of being in the rooms of AA that that should have like led me to that meeting. I should have run screaming in the other direction based on how I had been behaving. And but it was convenient to where I worked, and they met at noon, and so I went to that meeting, and there was a handsome man there, and I kept coming back, right? And that's all it took. But one day in that meeting, there was a woman there, and she talked about feeling like a turd that floated to the top of the tank. And all of a sudden, I was in her tractor beam. And because that's exactly how I felt, right? I'm just out there trying to fake like I'm a normal person, and it's exhausting. I get up and I go to work during the day, and I just try to kind of limp along until 5 o'clock, and I could get home and just, you know. And she just kind of laid it out there like that. And I, now not because I was attracted to her message, right? I was attracted to the guy in the meeting, and he, I had it on good authority, would only have something to do with somebody who was working the steps because he was principled. And I thought, I don't even know what that means, right? But I don't, and nor do I care, right? But I think I can pretend. And I, behind that obsession, I asked that woman to be my sponsor. And I started to do the things that she asked me to do. And one of those was to show up at her house at her kitchen table with my big book. And she started taking me through the book. And she taught me, you know, with the help of that group, because they were all at that table properly armed with the facts about alcoholism, right? They understood completely the physical allergy, the idea that, not the idea, the reality that when I put a drink of alcohol into my body, I only want more. Whether or not I take it on this occasion, I want it. And I will, if I don't get to take it on this occasion, I will organize my life as such that I can get to the place where I can have as much as I need. And I will supplement with other things, right? Because I'm kind of a crybaby lightweight. I can't drink very much. I have to be on stimulants in order to keep me upright and drinking for like all three kegs, which is really what I want. And I showed up at that woman's kitchen table, and she taught me about the allergy, and she taught me about the mental obsession, which by that point in my life, I hadn't had a drink or anything for 2.5 years, and even by my own definition, I was in worse shape than I was when I first got here. And through taking me through our literature and sharing her own experience in relation to that, she taught me to identify the physical allergy and the mental obsession in my own life, in my own alcoholism, and she placed me in a position to take that information and that experience and pass that on to other alcoholics. And that's what happened to me. That woman gave me a use and a purpose. And I wasn't even looking for it. You know, I just wanted to get laid. And it is that base. I was so desperately tricked, and I think it's the only way it could have worked for me. And so I'm sitting, you know, like years later at my dining room table with this new woman who's fresh out of treatment, and I met her at a Friday night meeting that I go to, and she was just sitting by herself, and I was on my way. I'm on the steering committee for that meeting, and I was on my way back to do some business and just walked by in passing and shook her hand and said, "Hello, how are you? Have you been here before?" And I was friendly to her, and I went and did my business, and then I came back, and she was still sitting there by herself. And I said, "You know, are you here alone?" She said, "Yes, I am." And I said, "Oh, my gosh, I've got a seat up by me." I don't save a lot of seats in meetings, but I try to save one seat next to me. So if I bump into somebody, I can grab them and take them to come and sit with me. And I introduce her to other women in the meeting, and I'm finding that that is really the most effective way to make people welcome, right? It's to just pay attention, you know, lift my gaze off of my phone or away from my circle of friends or the coffee pot or the whatever, and find the person who's sitting in that room all by themselves. And maybe they're okay to be there by themselves, but more often than not, when I have invited somebody to come and sit with me, they're delighted. And at the end of the meeting, they thank me for the warm welcome. And sometimes they ask me to sponsor them. Sometimes they already have a sponsor. I really don't care about that. I just want this to be a friendly place. And that's my responsibility, right? I have been in meetings when I first moved back to Minneapolis, and people thought I was new, thought I was a prospect, and as soon as they found out that I was sober for some time, right, and that I had a sponsor, and so there was nothing transactional to happen. They just went back to the circle that they were talking to. And it was like, whoa, man, I'm sober a long time, and I'm, you know, a little bit hurt, maybe a little bit PO'd, absolutely. And when things like that happen, because they do happen, I mean, I watch it happen. I just don't want to be that person anymore. I have been that person. I'm capable of being that person today, and I'm just, you know, praying every day for God to help me do better, to pay attention to the person who. So here's, I have all these notes written down, and then it's like, right? And it's kind of slowed down in here too, compared to where we started out in life. Really, like pretty calm. So I'm trying to pay attention, which is a good thing for us, right? Because all of these other things, we can go out and do CPC work, and we can go do PI work, and we can go into treatment centers, and we have to do all of that stuff. That's where the alcoholics are. We need to participate in court programs. We need to go and have working, good, consistent relationships with all of those professional communities that come into contact with us through their professional work. But the rest of the story is, how do we treat people once they're in our rooms? And I watch it happen. You know, we get here, we get the gift, and we I don't think it's malicious, right? And I don't think it's intentional, but I think it's just a complacency or I don't even care, frankly, what it is. I think we have to be intentional about reaching out to people. I'm in my district, I am the Special Needs and Accessibilities Chairperson, and one of the communities that's growing in our area, in our district, in the Twin Cities, is the deaf and hard of hearing, and increasing accessibility for the deaf community, because there are deaf alcoholics who want recovery. And they come to meetings, and sometimes they ask for an interpreter, and immediately hearing people, we freak out about the money. And so I'm gratified to hear money discussed, because I think oftentimes we freak out about the wrong thing, right? So we have alcoholics in front of us who want to be here, and how they feel when we freak out about the money is if they come with a price tag on their head. And it's not right. And it's not accurate. And I think if we can take a step back, and it's not like everybody has to go learn American Sign Language, right? Although it's a lot of fun, I have done it. And there are some, they're quite patient, and swear words are fun to learn. You know, there's some words that stick faster than others. There's other signs that I have made, and they're like, oh, no, don't do that. That doesn't mean what you think that means. And sometimes I have to go through my whole vocabulary to try to get to what are we trying to say, and or I'll make a sign and they'll say, so what does that mean? And they're like, that doesn't mean anything. Okay, all right, just keep trying, you know? But if we can step back and try to figure out, so let's put the money aside and figure out how can we work together to make the message of Alcoholics Anonymous accessible to these people. I'm watching it in the convention center this weekend with the little blue strip along the side, right? That's for the people on the scooters and the people with wheelchairs and the people with walkers so that they're not in the crush of self-centered, able-bodied alcoholics, right? Because we are, and I'm guilty. I caught myself on that blue thing. I'm like, oh, my God, we should all be working on this blue strip. It's so quiet and casual over here. And then it's like, beep, beep. Oh, this isn't for me. Oh, sorry, so sorry. Really, it is just about paying attention, I think, and being intentional. So I'm back to the dining room table, right? Because I get this topic, AA tomorrow, and I think, AA tomorrow, Missy, bless her heart, she says, you should do the whole thing in a robot voice. I'm like, you know, maybe Missy, when they ask you to do it, you can do it in a robot voice. That'd be great. No. But it occurred to me, so in 1934, when Abby showed up at Bill's house, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. In 1935, when Bill meets Bob, it's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. In 1939, you know, and during that little interim period as they're getting ready to publish the book, they found that method of carrying the message so effective that they were willing to commit it to our book, right? And in 1988, when I met Sharon at It's in the Book Group in Helena, Montana, what transformed my life, the meeting kept me coming back, right? But what transformed my life and my sobriety and everything that's come since then was that woman at her kitchen table carrying this message and taking me through the book. And in all of these many years, I'm sober since May 24th of 1988, right? That's what's worked. And I don't sponsor all of the women that I have sponsored. You know, I'm not still sponsoring them, but a lot of them are still sober. And the real deal here is that I'm still sober. And that's what this is all about, right? But I don't get to stay here without new people. And we have to make room for people, and I really appreciate it. Please tell me your name is Paul. Thank you. said, and now I remembered his name, but I can't remember what he said. That was so profoundly moving to me. Wow. Anyone? Excellent. New people. Wow, everybody heard something different. That's awesome. There, that's unique in an AA meeting, right? So new people. Diversity. So room for everybody, right? So all of this stuff, I'm like putting all this timeline together. It's like, so this is a consistent thread, one alcoholic working with another alcoholic. So what's going to be different is AA tomorrow is going to be the same thing, right? We got to be in all of these places. We got to go to jails. We got to go to prisons. But we got to be friendly to the people who are here now, right? The ones that come into the meeting now. And I appreciated also what Paul said about making this a safe place. I mean, I've seen it happen. And I think we just have to be better about being vocal about stuff that we see going on that's not right. And I'm not going to change somebody. My sponsor has helped me come to understand, right? If somebody's out there misbehaving and they're committed to being unprincipled, it's not my responsibility to change them. She has told me that the best way that I can help is to reach out to those new women and help them work the steps so that they're not available, right, to be preyed upon by unprincipled characters that are in these rooms. I mean, when I was new, probably like a year sober, this is how bad I was. This is how hard it was to sponsor me, right? When I was new, I raised my hand in a meeting one time in New York, and I said, my name's Teresa, I'm an alcoholic, and I just don't know if I'm lonely or if I'm horny. Brilliant, right? Perfect. And of course, right? Like no shortage of date opportunities at the end of that meeting. Right? And maybe, I don't know, is he the sickest, most neurotic guy, but he found the sickest, most neurotic girl to take out after the meeting. And I told my sponsor how honest I'd been in the meeting that day, and she was like, Teresa, Teresa, Teresa. What? And she said, you know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, who do you think comes here? Right? These are not the warm, well-adjusted faction of the human race, you know, myself included, honestly. And I just didn't get it. And it was women in AA who knew what the problem was and had the way out to offer me and got me busy taking some principled actions. And my life started to change. Really, all I did was just work the steps. And so that is the thing, right? 2015, it's just exactly the same. The most effective way I can help another alcoholic is helping them to recognize the physical allergy in their life. You know, why is it that when you take a drink of alcohol, you can't stop? And why is it when you're in between drinks, you're worse off than you are when you're drinking? Because that's really what got my attention. By the time I met up with Sharon, I hadn't had a drink for 2.5 years. I hadn't worked a step to save my soul. And I was praying for God to take me in my sleep. I was obsessing about driving myself head on into a semi, you know, oncoming two lane traffic kind of thing. I mean, I just didn't have any way out from underneath that. And and that woman unlocked the mystery for me. And so that's our responsibility, right? And whether I'm your sponsor or I'm not your sponsor, because we can't all sponsor everybody. And it takes more than my sponsor to keep me connected here. And it takes more than the women that I sponsor to keep me connected here. I'm part of a community. I'm sort of something significantly bigger than my sponsorship family and my home group and my district and my area and, you know, the world, right? But really, it just starts right here. You see somebody, I met a lady from Washington trying to get to a meeting, and I just grabbed her hand and took her to the meeting. You know, do what you can to reach out and make this a friendly place. And I'm transformed. I can't speak for them, right? But that's what keeps us humming here. Because if this is a friendly place, right, if I feel safe here, if I feel like I have a host of friends, and I'm quite fortunate that I see friends from Montana and friends from Massachusetts and friends from Texas and friends from Minnesota and friends from North Carolina and friends from South Carolina and friends like, holy crap. When I came here, I had TV. Right? And I couldn't go to evening meetings because I had quite a full schedule of TV. Right? And that was really my life. I could just barely fake it all day long, and it was exhausting to be out there trying to act like a normal person, and it was all I could do to get my daughter to bed at night so I could just drop in front of, like, Oklahoma. God, I love that musical. Or, I mean, it's like Elvis movies. I don't live in the real world, right? And today I do. The other part that of our literature that came to me as I was thinking about all of this is that business in the 11th step in the big book that my sponsor taught me as we were doing nightly inventory and prayer and meditation, right? And we were looking at our day ahead, and she pointed out that inventory, nightly inventory, comes before morning prayer and meditation. So today, and how well I'm doing when I wake up in the morning, really starts out the night before. So if we follow that analogy, for me, how well we do tomorrow in AA really depends on the actions that were taken today. And so if I'm sticking my hand out to the new person or the suffering person or the whoever, just anybody, right, that's outside of here, I'm going to be setting the table for tomorrow, right? And if I can do that, it's all a cool deal. Thank you. So, we can be Facebook friends, right, with the entire damn universe. We really can. But if I can't be friendly to you sitting next to me in a chair in a meeting, if I can't be sticking my hand out and getting out of myself, there's really very little hope for us as I see it. And if I can remember how much alcohol it took for me to be comfortable among people. I heard a guy say yesterday that long-term sobriety is all about getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because if we're going to be here without a drink in my hand, then I'm going to have to walk through a million experiences, not knowing, never having done it before. But if I will do it, and if I can ask for help, if I can admit what's going on, then guess what? I'm going to get through it sober. And that's all we're about, right? Me, you, all of us. So thank you so much. I appreciate your kind attention.
Thank you very much. I very much identify with you. And our last speaker tonight is Don, and he's from New Orleans.
Hi, I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's August 8, 1994, and my home group is the Responsibility Group. We meet on Fridays in Metairie, Louisiana. It's right outside of New Orleans. It's a great meeting. A little wacky, but a great meeting nevertheless. We'd love to have you there if you ever make it to New Orleans. I started getting really nervous listening to the speakers. They were great. They had notes, and I thought, I don't have a single note. I'm like, what I want to say is in my head, it's in my heart, some of it. And some of it's out there somewhere. I don't know where, but I believe it's fixing to come out. And I thought at first, it's like, these folks are really funny. And I remember a time when I told my wife I had to get up and speak. I said, babe, my wife is my best friend. She's a normal person, whatever that is, doesn't have drinking issues. And I said, baby, I'm going to try and tell a joke at this thing where I'm speaking. She says, tell me the joke. So I told her this joke, and I won't go into it. And she kind of smiled and said, you know you think you're hilarious. You are the entire population of people that think you're hilarious. Don't try. But I think of the topic of AA's future, AA tomorrow, a lot. My two favorite people, along with my wife, are my 26-year-old baby, Alex. She just graduated from nursing school. And my 5-year-old baby, Christabella, who just graduated from pre-kindergarten. If you have 21 years between kids, you may have alcohol in your story. I think of our future because if either of my babies or any of your babies or people that we don't know ever end up where I was shortly before August 8th of 1994. Desperate, alone, at a jumping off point with a gun to my head, I made a phone call to the hotline for our central office in New Orleans for Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a lucid interval. And a person whose name I can't tell you, I don't know who it was, answered the phone. They were kind to me. They had a man call me. I know now that they had what's called a 12-step list, people who agreed to be on this list and take calls from crazy, suicidal men like me. And he took me to my first AA meeting. And I went to that meeting. There was coffee there. There was a room there. And it was on a meeting list. People that came before me had done a whole lot of work to see to it that there was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting when I really needed it or I'd be dead. They're invisible people to me, many of them. But what I know today is that those people loved me and they didn't know who I was. They, in effect, were looking for at AA tomorrow relative to where they were at that point in time and who they were. I want to talk about four things, and I'm going to do it within 20 minutes, I hope. The alarm's going to go off 3 minutes before I got to shut up. The first thing is AA continuity. The second thing is fear and faith. I love the speaker last night. How great for the freaking speakers last night, huh? Fear and faith. I love that because I think about that a lot. And then I want to talk a little bit about challenges, and I'm very grateful that two speakers who preceded me talked a lot about the challenges, or some of them. And then I want to talk about vision. In terms of continuity or AA continuity, isn't that what we do? Isn't that what AA, for me, my AA steps, my recovery legacy tells me I'm supposed to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic because I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of what? Our steps. And to practice these principles in all of our affairs. That's what it counsels me or suggests that I do. And in the context of doing that, I think back to 1955 before I was born, in a room of people that I've never met any of them to my knowledge. Maybe one. If Mike Alexander was in that room, I've met him. But a fellow named Bernard Smith, not even an alcoholic, is in a room of about 100 people. And he makes the statement, I'm going to get it wrong, I'm not going to get the words exactly right. But he says something to the effect, we're not here for the people in the room. It's not about us. We're not here for the people in your home group. We are here for the alcoholic who stumbles in the darkness a few blocks over. We're here for the alcoholic baby who has yet to be born. Most of us, not everybody in the room, had not been born in 1955. I wasn't. Those people in that room had struggled and they continue to struggle. They put their heart, their love, their lives into assuring that there would be an Alcoholics Anonymous when people like me, sitting in a dark bedroom with a gun to their head, had a lucid interval and tried to make a phone call that would save their life. Those are the people that were invisible to most of us that thought about AA's tomorrow, so it's here today. We have things in AA that our founders, the people who came before us, envisioned trying to assure our continuity. This service structure, we talk about it. I'm going to tell you, I was warned off of service. I went, oh, don't go do that. It's all about politics. And I got tricked into it. Literally. I mean, somebody lied to me and said, you know, go do this. It's a lot of fun. And it take one time a year. You got to do it. It was a lie. And I'm still bitter. But that's how I got in it. But what I saw is, instead of people, and I'm from Louisiana, people scream into microphones. Some of them speak French. You can't even understand them. But and I'm like, there are people screaming at one another. And I didn't get it, and I didn't get all the acronyms, and I didn't really understand why we were there. I've come to understand in a big picture sense the reason we're there, the reason we participate is so we can have a whole lot of eyes and ears and noses and senses of touch and taste when they, whoever they is, try to do something that represents the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, a piece of literature, an approach we take on reaching out to others or whether not to. There is a general service conference. It is simply representatives of us. By and large, it's us. And the idea is to, in one sense, assure our quality. I think of it like this. I wish this was a Coke. We're in, I'm not picking any product. I'm not endorsing anything. But if you think of Coca-Cola, because we're in Atlanta, if you taste the Coca-Cola in Atlanta, it tastes just like the ones I taste in Louisiana. And that sucker tastes just like the ones in Boston and in Australia to me. I'm told there are little differences, but I can't tell. And in Europe and in China and in New Zealand and all the way over in Hawaii, all over the world, a Coke tastes like a Coke. You know why? Because Coca-Cola goes to extraordinary lengths to make sure that their quality is in check and the product is the same. Our general service conference, our process that we use where your group's message at the top bubbles down, if you will. It drops down in order to have a sense of our group's eyes, ears, noses, taste, sense of feel. Is this the message of Alcoholics Anonymous? That's part of what this process does. But the bigger part, in my view, is it looks toward our continuity and future. Our message in assuring the quality of it is, in very large measure, going to assure our future. If we dilute it, if we change it, well, it's not going to be AA anymore. It may be BB, CC, something different, but we need to be sure that we believe it's our message. In the context of fear and faith, I'm going to put this, we all know what fear and faith is in this room. Everybody has a little different perception of it. I made a very major change in my life with the support of my family that I've been struggling with for 5 years. For the first time in 31 years, I made a job change. I did it in my first day at my two new jobs was on Wednesday. So naturally, I left work Thursday and came up here and took a couple of days off. I'm off to a great start. But before I made this change, I'll tell you I was terrified because my situation I had was safe, secure, lucrative. But it wasn't what we wanted to do. And my wife was my biggest advocate and my best friend in this difficult time for me. And at one point shortly before I made the decision jointly with her, she made the statement, she's not an alcoholic, but she pointed out to me, Don, I've heard your story, and sometimes you say things like, God, my higher power, pulled me from the deep end when I was drowning, brought me to the shallow end and saved me. I don't think he's going to drown me again. So you're a little more dramatic. It's sort of like you were on fire and drowning at the same time. God drags you out the deep end, stops you from drowning, and puts the fire out. Chances are pretty good he's neither going to light you on fire nor drown you again in the deep end, and probably definitely not doing both. So why don't you do this thing? The notion of faith is a challenge for me, but collectively you give me that faith. When I look at you, when I talk with you, when I feel what you feel, I know there is hope. I knew it when I came into AA, and I learned and I saw and I felt your hope. I mean, happy, joyous, and free. Words that meant nothing to me. It was a lie. I am happy, joyous, and free today. Now, in 2 seconds, I can be terrified, restless, irritable, and discontent. But I have tools to deal with that that I didn't have before. The next notion I want to talk about a little is challenges. We've got remarkable challenges, right? How is AA going to be here in 5 and 20 and 50 and 80 and 1,000 years? And the other, you know, and I'm counseled, we live a day at a time. It's a day at a time. I never think about, well, I don't in a personal spiritual context, but just as our speakers have said, tomorrow ain't going to look very good if we don't do the labor today. Today's when it has to happen. I've got to do what I'm responsible for doing today. And the way I have been brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous, I am responsible. Not you, not somebody in my home group, I am. You know, I love the comment and the discussion about safety in AA. I'll quickly tell you, I had a female sponsor until she died in 2000. I had one for 18 years. She died in 2013. I didn't get her because, you know, I was really the special guy. I got her because I was 13-stepping girls in her home group. That's the truth. And she sort of, I won't go through the long version of it, but she threatened some violence, and then I started hanging out with her and her husband. Just what happened. But I came to learn in doing 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, just taking steps with her, that every woman in AA is a lady. Everybody is a mother. I mean, a daughter. Some are mothers. They all have mothers. They may be a sister. They certainly are friends. Many are sponsors. I got a different perspective. And I got it because I started developing a relationship with a little girl who at the time was very young, who was my daughter, Alex. I am responsible for safety in Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is responsible for safety in Alcoholics Anonymous. While I might not be able to change what's in a person's head or heart, I sure as hell can run some interference from some idiot who would be like me, but for Trudy, and who's a 13th step in some girl in my home group, or frankly, some guy who's getting 13th stepped in my home group. It is what it is. I'm the guy who has to do that. If our future's to be better, I have to do it today. If we're going to assure our continuity, I can't rely on other people tomorrow to do it. I've got to lay that groundwork today and do it. How do we do that as a fellowship, though? We're afraid. I mean, I'll just say it. As an institution, Alcoholics Anonymous is terrified of change. Well, then that makes... I'm terrified of change. Change is bad. It's awful, right? But for a fellowship that is so fundamentally founded on the idea of change, it's just... There's such a lack of congruity when we cannot bear as an institution to look at an evolution of, for example, how we communicate. Think for a second. Think if Bill Wilson popped into this room. Somebody shocked the carcass and he woke up and here he is. And you tell him, "But Bill, we missed you. We have this thing where you can get in front of a lighted piece of plastic looking stuff. It's got a keyboard on it like a typewriter, and you type some stuff and smash a button, and you can send millions of messages around the world at the speed of light. The speed of light, as fast as you can type." The guy would have a heart attack and stroke out and die right there because he would be excited. He would not be a person who would be contained. And I doubt Dr. Bob, if you would just drop that information on him, if he were here, would be very well containable as well. It is a remarkable opportunity that our founders never considered. Think about it. We're communicators, right? But we use sometimes, respectfully, and I'll hold myself responsible, the traditions frighten me to get away from them. They're guidelines. They are, and they're important, and the history behind them is essential for us to understand it. But it doesn't say we should be invisible. And it doesn't say that we should simply lock into stone something that is going to be the Pony Express, that's going to be the smoke signal of the next century, maybe the next 10 years. I don't know how people are going to communicate. But I know this, and I'm going to take the grapevine, because frankly, I love the grapevine. Historically, it has a lot of significance. It's had its challenges. It has its challenges today. How many people know what the grapevine is? There are people in my home group in AA that do not know what the grapevine is. Never heard of it. Print media is not doing well in the world. The AA grapevine, and I'm going to tell you, for me, when we look at it at the institutional level of Alcoholics Anonymous, we look at money. To me, the money is a metric. It's a measurement. How are we doing? The grapevine has had financial challenges. But the biggest indicator, the thing that I look at, is the number of subscriptions continually decreases. Whether or not it makes money, the subscriptions decrease. What does that mean? We're having trouble communicating. And for a fellowship that's founded upon communication, not communicating well is something that we should be looking at changing. I'm not in any sense saying, this is not to say we do away with the grapevine, really just the opposite. You have a platform. You have an opportunity. The challenge gives you the opportunity. Perhaps we can take the grapevine or something like it and use it as a petri dish to test drive all kinds of things. Take our collective imagination, bear our principles of our traditions and our concepts and our steps in mind, and start driving this sucker a little faster to see if we can get somewhere close to where the rest of the world of communications is. And I say it respectfully. I've served in the service structure. I understand the issues. I'll say something else in terms of challenges. We talk about the worldwide challenges of AA, and it blends right into vision. There are challenges in communicating worldwide and culturally. And I will tell you, alcoholics, I've had the privilege of serving as your trustee at large for the United States for 4 years. I've been blessed to see some incredible things in AA, and I could tell you story after story of how well it works. Alcoholics Anonymous works in unbelievably complex, difficult situations for people with challenges we can't imagine. And it really is at the four corners of the globe. But if you picture the places between the four corners and think of it like those mobile telephone commercials or cellular telephone commercials, there are places where there are lots of blank spaces. There are places where there are blank spaces in China and in Russia, and there are places where there are blank spaces in Louisiana. Culturally, socioeconomically, and just geographically, we have not run out of still suffering alcoholics by any stretch. There are a lot of us. Our speakers have alluded to that. So what do we do for vision? Ooh, scary. The guy's getting scary. I've got 3 minutes. I promise to end timely. The best single article I've ever read on leadership was written in the AA Grapevine, I believe, in 1958, March of 58. Bill Wilson wrote an article for the Grapevine on leadership and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's reprinted in the service manual in the ninth concept essay. It talks about leadership. It's so beautiful because it applies to the other, when we talk about applying these principles to all of my affairs, I see how this applies throughout every aspect of my life. In a nutshell, we lead by example. We don't lead by mandate. We don't lead by being the nice guy or lady who says what you want to hear. We lead by our illustration and example. And in that context, I am responsible for doing those things to be the example. Whether I'm a leader or not, I'm not the one who determines that. But my example, I can determine what that is. So what is vision? You know, we think of, you know, 2020 or myopic vision, whichever. It's, to me, it's far broader than that, and it gets into the international spectrum. I was just so gratified to hear Paul talk about the World Service Meeting. We've had 23 World Service Meetings now. Most members of AA have no idea what that is. It's a gathering of people from the World Community of Alcoholics Anonymous, one from each, maybe two from each structure. We have a representative from the U.S., we have two representatives from the U.S. and Canada at each one. People talk about their experience, strength, and hope in AA and what works and what doesn't. I'll tell you, there's so much. We have the original service structure and a lot of experience, right? The notion that we're the mothership and we know best for everything is dead wrong. I've seen it, I've heard it, and I believe we don't have all the answers and have the best information. There is remarkable, incredible wisdom in other service structures throughout the world from which we can and should and do learn. We need to have better connection, not for the purpose of forming some world-united governing body of AA, but exactly the opposite, to have that invaluable experience, strength, and hope. India, mark my words, 25 years from now, India's population of AA members will be larger than our own, probably by far. They are using communication modalities that we are not. They are answering tradition questions as we sit here that we're having challenges getting around. We can't change. Vision to me is no more than having our eyes over the horizon. We have to look up. We have to look down. We have to look to places that we're not looking in order to have that vision. We're going to miss cue on some things. We're going to see mirages. We're going to see things and misidentify them. But if we're not looking, we're not going to do them. We're not going to have it happen if we don't begin looking today. So how do we do that? The selection of our leaders. Absolutely, positively, with respect to each of your groups, demand leadership from your trusted servants. Do not accept, particularly the further you go down in the service structure from the board, a flaccid, complacent set of leaders. Demand vision from them. Demand that they not focus on, they lose sight of vision, but demand instead that they, I probably didn't say that in English. Let me try again. Demand that your leaders not lose sight of the vision that will assure our continuity. How do we get better connected with our, how does the fellowship, how does the service structure get better connected? I look at it this way. In my business, I don't mind telling, I'm a lawyer in my business. Whenever I go someplace that I'm not from to go try a case, I go to Walmart. And I walk around and I talk with people. And then I go back another time and I go to another Walmart and talk with people. And then you know where I go? I go to another Walmart and talk with people. You know why I talk with all those people? Because that's where they hide jurors. They go to Walmart. You know where they hide alcoholics in recovery? In AA meetings. Our board and our AA fellowship have a disconnect, in my view, that can be better brought together, not by money, not by dictator mandate, by simply communicating with one another. And the communication begins and ends. It starts in the AA group, but it is always one alcoholic to another. Thank you for letting me share. I love you guys.